On a Saturday night, a week before Christmas in December 2022, 16-year-old Aoife Johnston attended the emergency department at University Hospital Limerick with suspected sepsis, a treatable condition. 2 days later, she was dead. The ED was grossly overcrowded. Aoife waited 13 and a half hours before being treated. It was too long. A report into her death highlights a litany of failures at the hospital. Aoife was not triaged on time. She was placed in the wrong section of the ED. Doctors and nurses who treated her were unaware that she was at risk of sepsis. She was not prescribed medication on time, and even when she was prescribed it, it took a further hour before she received it. Apart from being overcrowded, the emergency department was understaffed. It was down a doctor, and there were five fewer nurses than a full roster. The protocols for alleviating overcrowding were not operated. Trolleys were not moved to wards. Decisions were taken by senior managers, but staff on the ground were not clear on what had been decided. A report by former Chief Justice Frank Clark found that Aoife Johnston's death was almost certainly avoidable. It makes for grim reading. It makes 17 recommendations, but it does not find fault with any individual. The chief executive of the HSE has long promised accountability, and Bernard Gloster is with us now in our studio. Good afternoon and welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Justin.
At the centre of this report is a family, grieving parents who lost their child in appalling circumstances. Can you understand how distressing it must be for them to read a report which says that their daughter's death was almost certainly avoidable?
I can only try to imagine, and as I've said a number of times on this programme and other media platforms since Christmas, we can never tire of saying we failed Aoife. We failed her badly. Our failure caused her death, and that has led to the devastation that her family are now left with. And so it is important to start any commentary by recognising that, by restating that, and by that motivating us to do what we can now to ensure that the system is better than that.
So do you accept then that Aoife's death could have been avoided if there had been a better management at the hospital on that particular night in the emergency department?
So the report by Mr Justice Clark, which I asked him for, and which was what we call an out-of-process report, and is a very effective report in so many ways, and I'll come back to that in a moment, it essentially finds three fundamental issues, two of which are within the control of the services. The first of those is the failure in a number of systems. Systems in triage, systems in the sepsis protocol, systems for de-escalating the congestion in the department. The second that you've alluded to at the top of the programme is the apparent absence of systems or the ad hoc nature of systems and how the communication within those systems happened so that managers on the floor were clear on what to do. And the third is, of course, the already well-established and commented position on Limerick of being of capacity.
Yes, and so you know then that the judge highlighted that, as you've mentioned, the sepsis protocols were not followed. The protocols to reduce overcrowding were not implemented. The system for administering prescribed medicines was an ad hoc system. Several systems were either not in place at all or were only in place in an ad hoc way. That's a management failing, isn't it?
That's a failure at a number of levels within the operation of the hospital. And I did say during the course of the Clark investigation, I think I've said it on this programme, that the question of accountability is appropriate in this case. I have said that since last Christmas before I commissioned Frank Clark. And I have, as a result of this report, already commenced disciplinary processes and investigations in respect of several people. I'm clearly not going to comment on their individual details, and that wouldn't be appropriate. But I have activated the HSE accountability processes because it is appropriate in this case.
Okay, but we haven't heard you say today yet that you accept that there was, I mean, to put it bluntly, incompetence at management level at the hospital on that night.
So you're going to appreciate, Justin, that I can't prejudge anybody. Management is a term that identifies very specific individuals. What I am saying to you, and I want to be in no doubt about this, I accept fully every aspect of Frank Clark's report. I have done what I said I would do with that. I have considered it carefully. It has helped me to establish what the real concerns are at the real and appropriate level of alleged failing. And I have now activated the disciplinary processes in respect of that. And can I say those processes, by being activated alone and some of the steps that are taken in them, even without there being findings against any individuals, they have already been quite significant in the individual working careers of people. So people need me in no doubt that accountability is being pursued here, but it is being pursued lawfully and appropriately. Okay. And fairly. And lest there be any doubt, everything that Frank Clark has said to me is accepted, including all of the failures that you have pointed to.
There are currently three members of staff on administrative leave and two others are facing disciplinary action. Is that correct?
There are a number of staff on administrative leave.
How many?
At the moment, there are four people on administrative leave from the particular roles that they have. But there are a number beyond that also that are subject to disciplinary investigation.
In total then, how many staff are facing disciplinary proceedings as a result of what happened that night?
So at this point in time, six people are the subject of various considerations within the disciplinary process.
And I appreciate that you have to go through those processes fairly in your organisation, but are people going to know, are you going to be able to tell people at the end of this process, the people of Limerick, the people of Ireland, the Johnston family, what level of accountability has taken place? Will you let people know what actions you've taken when they are completed?
Well, can I just say, Justin, it's not just a question of fairly in the context of the HSE. It's fairly within the context of the Constitution and the law and the rights of every citizen to fairness when they're accused of something, their right to defend themselves, to reply and to interrogate what they're accused of. Disciplinary procedures by their nature are conducted privately and they're private to the individuals in their contracts of employment. And I don't think you can point me to any employer in Ireland where that's different. What I can say to you is, I have said to you disciplinary proceedings have commenced. I have said to you there's already a significant impact in terms of people discharging their roles at the current time without finding being made against them. And that's appropriate in this context. I have said to you there will be a disciplinary investigation and an outcome to that. And what I will be able to do is to confirm to people that there has been a conclusion. I will be able to confirm whether or not there were findings against people, and I will be able to confirm whether or not I applied sanctions, but I will not be able to confirm who or what those people are. That's not lawful or appropriate or fair.
When do you expect to conclude that process of disciplinary action?
It's going to take a different amount of time in respect of every individual, because people have, as Mr. Justice Clark pointed out in Chapter 10 of this report, people have very significant rights, and ultimately the exercise of those rights will determine the length of the procedure that it takes. Disciplinary processes by their nature can be very complex and very lengthy, and that's one of the reasons Mr. Justice Clark commented on the need for him to produce a timely report. And I appreciate, before I published this report on Friday, there was a lot to criticism.
Yes.
That he didn't make individual findings against people. He points out clearly in Chapter 10, were he to be able to do that, you wouldn't see this report for a very, very, very long time.
Would it have been helpful to you if he was able to make adverse findings against individuals in his report? Would that speed up the disciplinary process that you're now engaged in?
No, it would have been quite the contrary. If he were able to make, or had he chosen to make adverse findings in respect of any individual, there's a pretty good chance his report would have been struck down in the courts where it challenged. That's the first thing. And the second thing is I would ask anyone to reflect on the fact that were the former Chief Justice of Ireland allowed to make a finding against you in what is a civil process and a civil report, were that to be the case, what chance would anybody stand of a fair hearing under the disciplinary procedures in their contract? And the answer to that, of course, is they wouldn't. And I don't think that it's a case of the very binary option of, on the one hand, recognising the trauma For this family, but also on the other operating lawfully. It isn't one or the other. I have responsibilities to everybody in this context. Mr. Justice Clark did exactly what I asked him to do.
Okay.
And he has provided a pathway to accountability which did not exist before he produced his report.
But the solicitor for the Johnston family, Damien Tansey, was on Drive Time earlier this week, and he said that he met you in January and that he and the family were left with the impression that Judge Clark's report would be able to make adverse findings. I mean, did you give him that impression?
Well, certainly that wasn't my intention to do so. And I don't think it's going to be helpful to get into rehearsing a very detailed meeting with the family here. But what I will say is this. What I did say to the family was Mr. Justice Clark could go where he wished, and he did.
Okay, but at what point by whom was it decided that there wouldn't be adverse findings made against individuals? Did you make that decision?
I think that was very clear from the outset when the terms of reference were published. I've explained to you why he couldn't make adverse findings against individuals.
Yes, but he says in his report that he made the decision not to make findings of fact after hearing from your legal counsel. Did your lawyers ask the judge not to go down the road of making findings of fact or adverse findings?
No, what happened in that case and what he's referring to in the report is in fact that after I met with the family, I made it clear to Mr. Tansey that he could make representations to Mr. Justice Clark about the conduct of the investigation, which I understand he did and was quite correct to do so. I didn't send somebody into Mr. Justice Clark proactively to tell him what he could or couldn't do. Mr. Justice Clark asked me to make a submission to him on an aspect of the terms of reference, and that's what the legal representatives of the HC did.
Did your legal representatives then make a representation to suggest that there should not be findings of fact in this report?
No, I think what they did was they made a submission to him on clarification of the terms of reference that were already in place. But I think the fundamental point is this, Justin. If people wanted and desired accountability in our public services, be it in this case or any other, that accountability, if it is not pursued lawfully and appropriately, it doesn't stand up, it can't happen. And when I met with the family, I did make it clear Mr. Justice Clark could go where he wished, and he did. And Chapter 5 of this report is very significant in that. And I also made it clear it was an independent investigation in which he could make any and wide-ranging recommendations, which he did. And I did make it clear on this programme. So I think this is the important point that Mr. Tansey didn't reflect in his public commentary. Several times since Christmas on this and other programmes, long before Mr. Justice Clark concluded his work, I've made it clear that the question of accountability is a question for me as the Chief Executive Officer of the HSE, that it would be discharged where it was right, correct and proper. And that is the case.
All right. But the family, according to Mr. Tansey, want another inquiry, a wider statutory inquiry, which can go deeper, which can attribute or make adverse findings and findings of fact. Would you support that if that were to be ordered by the minister?
I don't believe, quite frankly, it's necessary. I don't believe it will tell us anything different. And I don't believe it will enable any greater level of accountability than that already being pursued. However, can I be clear, we're a public sector organisation. And if those matters are decided by government, then, of course, we cooperate with them fully. The principal thing I would want to say, Justin, and I made this comment when I published the report on Friday, despite any commentary on this report before it was published or since, all of the reports in the world are not going to change the harm that was done to Aoife's family as a result of the failing here. And what I can do is, firstly, have this report produced, which is quite unique in its time and content. I would say it's a report of substantial benefit.
Yes.
And it will enable, where it's appropriate, accountability to be discharged.
And you have said that you are going to implement each of the 17 recommendations of Judge Clark's report. What immediate steps now are you going to take?
So already, my Chief Clinical Officer, Dr. Colm Henry, and other relevant people in the organisation are setting out an implementation plan for each of those recommendations. Two of them are most likely more relevant to the HICWA examination, which the Minister ordered in May of this year, in respect of emergency department and capacity issues in the Midwest. But all of the others will be fully pursued and implemented across the clinical community and the management community. And can I also say, again, and I'm grateful to Mr. Justice Clark for this, those recommendations have a relevance beyond Limerick.
Okay. And I do want to ask you about the capacity issues at the hospital. Overcrowding was at the core of the problems on the night that Aoife died. And it is still a major problem. The current capacity at the hospital, the current number of inpatient beds is, I think, 535 beds. A 2008 report by Horwath for the HSE said at that time, by 2010, there were 642 inpatient beds needed. That's a shortfall of 107 beds on what is needed. I know there's construction underway on a 96-bed block. When will that be open?
I expect it will be open in quarter two of next year. And again, in the event that people think the builder will hand us back the keys, and then we'll start the process of opening it.
But when will it be ready to receive patients?
So I expect that to be at the end of quarter two next year. We are already commenced the recruitment for that block. The staffing has been fully approved, and we'll maximise every opportunity in that. The last time I was here with you, I did say that there were interim steps being taken, including a 50-bed step-down unit in Nina, for which we've been much criticised. That opened less than 2 weeks ago. There are about 16 or 17 patients in it today. That'll increase rapidly up to 50. In October, another 22-bed step-down facility will open in Ennis in County Clare. And in December of this year, a modular block drop of 16 beds will go onto the Dúradóil site. So there are a lot of efforts within the limitations of what we're working with to increase and enhance and support the capacity.
Doesn't the Clark report make a strong, compelling case for the opening of a new Model 3 hospital in the area?
Well, what I would say he makes a strong, compelling case for the capacity being behind where it is, and he traces that, as you say, back to Haworth, and we can rehearse a lot of what the expectations were at that time. But he does make a compelling case for that. But I think the most compelling case he makes is, firstly, evidencing what I've said previously, which is we need to move as rapidly as we can to maximise the capacity of the Dúradóil site. And I believe his report does support and evidence the question that HICWA have now been asked to answer.
Is the emergency department at University of Limerick Hospital safe today?
Safer. And that's what I say in every part of the health service.
Okay, but Judge Clark in his report says that this could happen again. How can the people of the Midwest have confidence that they're going to be safe at their hospital when it's there in black and white, according to the judge, that there is a risk of reoccurrence?
I think there is that risk there, but I think the risk is less. I think the risk is mitigated, and I think it's increasingly mitigated. However, that said, I have concerns arising out of Frank Clark's report, and indeed the report of a support team I sent to the hospital in May, around the systems within which the emergency department operates as part of the overall hospital. I am satisfied every step is being taken at this point in time to make it safer, and safer is what I continue to pursue.
Will overcrowding at this hospital continue into this winter?
It's most likely there will be pressure on this hospital right throughout the winter, and that's the very reason why, if you take the three parts of Clark, systems, communication from senior to frontline level, and capacity, it's very important we do things on all three fronts there. Are doing things on all three fronts.
Will more operations be cancelled this winter in Limerick because there is going to be continued overcrowding, as you've just said?
So the responsibility that I would say is on that hospital and any other hospital, and to be fair to Limerick, I think it's lost that a lot of good work happens there every day. But the responsibility on the hospital, on my regional executive officer there, is to make those decisions every day against the backdrop of safety.
Is it likely?
I think it's inevitable there will be days in the winter when procedures will be deferred and when other services will have to be curtailed.
A second report was published on Friday, the Rothwell report. It's 10 pages long. It's a report from the hospital support team, and it made a damning conclusion. It said that it is unclear from an operational perspective as to who is in charge at the University Hospital Limerick site on any given day. they're not clear on who's running the hospital on any given day. That's a shocking finding, isn't it?
It's a very stark finding. And to assure people, separately to what we've just discussed in terms of accountability and other processes, we were changing our structures anyway from the 30th of September. And I've made a decision within the new management structures of the Midwest that the university hospital on the site in Dordoyle requires a dedicated CEO, and there will be one in place on the 30th of September.
All right. Before I let you go, we hear and read today about further delays to the National Children's Hospital, with reporting now that it might not open until 2026. I mean, the children's hospitals that are in operation at the moment, their staff there are working in cramped conditions. The rooms are unsuitable in a lot of cases for the children who are there. Are you concerned by these reports that we're not going to have the new children's hospital now for perhaps 2 years?
I'm exceptionally concerned, because for every day this hospital isn't open, the people of Ireland are being denied the opportunity to access probably one of the best healthcare facilities in the world when it does open. What I would say is, what's required here from the contractor BAM and the Paediatric Hospital Development Board is a compliant programme. And compliant means resourced, that has an exact date to finish this job, this very expensive job, this very necessary job. But right now, today, we do not have a compliant programme of completion, and that's of significant concern to me.
Bernard Gloucester, Chief Executive of the HSE, thank you for talking to us today.
Thanks, Justin.
We're back with more after this break.